This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, hello. Thank you guys for joining me once again for another episode. And I want to thank each and every one of you who has been listening, helping those around you, getting hopefully some solid information from my podcast. Because like I said, the whole point of me doing this was therapeutic for myself. For me getting out of my situation, and I feel like there's a lot of loopholes where people either they don't know what to do, it's not spoken about enough. Like I said, one of the biggest tools that an abuser has is to keep you silent, and this is a way for me to help each and every person that listens to this or hears about this, whether it's my podcast or something else, break that silence. Sing like a canary, never wants to stop, you know, because that is easily one of your biggest and strongest tools you have. Because believe it or not, from the very first time you tell it to every time that you wind up speaking about the subject, I feel it strengthens you within. You realize how strong you really are for going through something like this. Because there's people out there that they no way, I'd be out. Okay. Easier said than done. But I applaud each and every one of you for even listening or trying to find the information, because that, like I said, knowledge is power. And this is definitely part of that, you know. And I want to reiterate that if anybody needs to email me, please do not hesitate. loveisn'thurt@gmail.com. And I try to pretty much answer everyone that responds. That reaches out to me. And whether it is you just needing some place to vent to say, hey, this is what my situation is, this is what I've gone through, I left or I'm still in it, I don't know what to do, I'm overwhelmed, you know, whatever. Like I said, that is part of what I'm here for, you know. I do thank each and every one of you. And today's subject is on reactionary abuse. I know I do believe I've spoken about it in the past. But I'll be honest, it's the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial that brought up a lot of triggers. I wasn't the only one. I've had a few people reach out to me speaking about this in particular. That's why I figured I would speak about it on the podcast today. Reactionary abuse is a real thing. And it, to put a visual to it, it's basically if you were locked in a cage, you couldn't get out. There was nothing you could do. And the one person that at one point in time you thought would take care of you winds up hurting you every day without fail. They're poking you, they're kicking you, they're hitting you, they're not giving you the opportunity to even go to the bathroom or, you know, those basic necessities of life, okay? Drinking water, food, you know, that kind of stuff. And the only time when you do get out, they are full of piss, vinegar, you name it. They're going to throw it at you. They're very abusive. They're extremely mean. very volatile. They'll, you know, like I said, it's that's what it's like. You are locked in this cage and there's no way out, and there's no, you can't see that there's a way to get out, at least not from the perspective that you're at that point in time, especially while you're going through being hit and prodded and, you know, things being taken away from you, or, you know, like I said, other things, you know, because there's always seems to be some form of sexual abuse along with it, you know, because they try to control you, they try to manipulate you, they try to gaslight you so you think you're going nuts, you know, which keeps you a little bit more silent than you probably would be anyway, because you feel like, am I going nuts? Am I going crazy? Am I, you know, and when you have that kind of level of abuse, there's going to be some point where you're just going to lash out. You're just going to, like I said, it's like an animal that's caged, you know, they will eventually turn on you if you are mean to them like that. They just are, you know, and when you lash out, it gives them the, ammunition to say, see, I'm being abused by, you know, and it's like, you're like, yeah, what? No, not you, you know, and there's, and they're the person that says it first, or they go to the resources that you mutually have, which could be simply family or friends or whatever. And they will, they'll reach out to sides of family or people in the family that they haven't spoken to or have never gotten along with. And then all of a sudden they sending this, you know, huge text or something about all the bad that you've done and, you know, and all this. And hopefully some of those people realize, you know, they're trying to be hoodwinked into becoming a flying monkey, and they go, no, I've been down that road myself, or I've seen a friend of mine, I ain't going for that shit, you know. And like I said, it makes it difficult when, you know, because that's who they're going to reach out to first, is family and friends, you know. And if there's mutual people that you guys respect, or, you know, or what you thought was a level of respect, you know, because for you, it's hard and true, okay? For the abuser, I think it's more of a manipulation tactic, you know. They try to have it where people are on their side, you know. But it's just one of those things that it's very difficult, you know. It gets messy because you go from not saying anything to all of a sudden they get to hear all the dirty laundry, you know. And like I said, it's like this trial, you know. There's all kinds of dirty laundry that's out there, you know, and that had to be brought up because of it, you know. And it's wrong that, you know, I feel like there's certain things that, you know, if you're in a normal relationship, you could have just let the dirty laundry just let it be, and you guys go your separate ways and be done, you know. But in an abusive relationship, one, you can't get out the same way as a normal relationship. A normal relationship, you can go to the person, you can say, hey, things just, I'm not feeling it. Things are just not going well for me. I need to take a break, or whatever it is, okay? In an abusive relationship, you have to find a way to get out and get out safely. And a lot of times that means I can't go to you. Or like I said, it winds up being like the previous episode that I had on this podcast. You go to the person thinking, okay, well, this is how you break up with somebody. You go to them, you have a little chit-chat, and you're done, you know. And that way you can say your piece. That way there's a closure to it. There's, you know, there's a healthy way of handling a breakup, And that would be one of those healthy ways of handling it. But when you're dealing with an unstable person, and to me, anybody who is an abuser is unstable on some level, because that is not normal behavior. It just isn't. And whether they receive that kind of behavior as a child and it became more and more as an adult, and that was, you know, them just repeating the pattern, you know, it doesn't matter where it comes from, you know. Abuse is abuse, and it's wrong. And it is against the law. It's just one of those things that is very difficult to approve. And there's just a lot of things that the courts don't understand or haven't caught up to the fact about it. Or the victim is being presented with, oh, well, hey, we can take him to, you know, criminal offense here, and we can arrest him, and we can da-da-da. And you're like, you know what? I just don't want to make a big fuss out of it. I got my restraining order. I should be good. You know, and come to find out, that's not the truest case. But being under the perspective of being a survivor, you know, you just left. You are still in survival mode. There's even things that I'm still going through that I know are survival mode, that I'm trying to get myself out of that, trying to pull myself away, because I had so many years of living in survival mode that it became the norm for who I am or was, and I'm trying to pull myself away from some of that. You know, and one, it could even be triggering stuff, you know. Like I said, this trial that went on, it's when you hear some of the statements that were stated either on the stand or recordings or something like that, or something that some eyewitness had stated, but most of it was things that I heard. Like I said, I didn't sit and watch the whole thing or anything like that. It's just happened to be certain things I got wind of. And when you know, you know. And if you've been through this, you know what reactionary abuse is. And it is just simply, in essence, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And that's what it is. You get to that point where if you don't lash out, you will become mad. And I mean mad like a Mad Hatter, okay? You're going to wind up going crazy because they're doing everything they can to manipulate you into that aspect. And like I said, there were some triggering moments that I even had with hearing some of the things I heard, you know. But there are definitely certain things that I was like, yeah, he was definitely the one that was abused, you know. It just, you know, like I said, when you hear it and you know it, you know. And the abusers use that reactionary abuse that comes out as their moment to say, see, they're a bad person. See, they're an abuser. See, they're a manipulator. They're this, they're that, they're the other. And it's not. It's just you literally had a person in a cage who had no way out. They're, you know, and all you've done has been manipulating and abusing them along the way. Gaslighting and, you know, all those other lovely tactics that they pull, you know. Sexual abuse to me is a, at least in my situation, it was something that was heavily utilized. You know, I didn't have the right to say no, but yet I would be accused of being told no, you know. And granted, like I said, the last like 4 or 5 years of that relationship is when I started to stand up for myself, was when I would verbally, you know, bite back. I never physically bit back with him, except for like when he, you know, would jump on me, hitting me, choking me, trying to, you know, like I said, he put all of his weight on me trying to, and put my face, buried it into a pillow. I couldn't breathe for nothing, you know. And happened to be the same day as George Floyd, his death. And it was extremely difficult because I stated the same things that he said, which was, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. And his response to me was one of, you know, well, as long as you can talk, you can still breathe. And I remember hearing him say that. With one of his stepchildren. And at the time of it happening, I didn't think twice about it. You know, I just thought it was, I don't know. I just, you know, there's so many things that came flooding after he tried to choke me out, because I really thought my life was completely on the line that day. And he still, it's still, even after that, he put the blame on me, and he would even tell me while he was still sitting on me with all of his weight that I needed to relax so that way he could get up. You know, and I'm sorry, that's just wrong. But that was the day that I decided I'm done. I cannot continue this. I thought for a moment that I could just, you know, let the kids move out, because the kids were older. My son was older, so he was getting to the point of moving out of the house. They were going to be going to another state kind of stuff. And I thought, you know, let them go and things will quell down. He won't be as high strung because the kids are around or anything. My dad will eventually pass away. And then I can find my freedom. Great plan, right? And that day was when I realized he tried to kill me flat out. And if I'm here alone, if he's doing this with a full house, like everybody was home when he did this. But granted, we were in our bedroom with the door closed and there was, you know, like TV, music, stuff like that going on. So nobody could hear. And the way that it happened was we were in a verbal argument, as usual, because, you know, that happened like probably 30 times a day. And it got to a point where I was just like, I said, you know what, I'm going to go for a drive. I, you know, and normally he was the one that would just take his keys and just leave. He wouldn't say a word. But this time I went to grab my keys and I said, I'm going to go for a drive. And he nailed me and knocked me to the ground. Next thing I know, I'm being suffocated into a friggin' pillow, you know. And that was the scariest. I thought being hit, smacked, things like this was his rapes that he would go on, the manipulating, the gaslighting, the, you know, the stupid psychological stuff he would do were just, like I said, I used to call him the ogre, you know, and very good depiction of that. Unfortunately, he took pride in that. I would tell him he acts like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, and again, he took pride in those things. And that can be dangerous. But when that day came along, when he did that, all because I wanted to go for a drive, what? They were my keys. It's my car. It's registered in my name. Granted, he was on the registration as well. Don't get me wrong. Just, you know, that was the day that I decided I can't do this, you know. But for me, my reactionary was I became verbal with him. And I would tell him, you can't do this. Granted, his response half the time was, you have to do this. And I go, why do I have to do this? Nobody has to do anything, you know. And he goes, well, you're my wife. You have to. No, I don't. And I don't have to stay married to you. As he found out, you know, you pushed me so far. I'm not going to take it anymore. You know, and it took a long time for me to get to that point. There are many, many hours that I spent in the bathroom, in the shower, on the bathroom floor, crying my friggin' eyes out because I didn't know anywhere to turn. And I was deathly afraid to reach out to anything that was called domestic violence, anything. So any hotline was not something I did. You know, I'll be honest, some of the things that saved me, like I've stated many times, was your social medias, your YouTubes, podcasts, things like this, are the things that pulled me into an understanding of what was going on, you know, because I didn't know the term reactionary abuse or reaction abuse, you know. That just wasn't something I even knew was even a terminology. I didn't know what it was until actually after I had left him and I had came across Dr. Romani. She had one of her episodes was on reactionary abuse. And the whole thing, I'm like nodding my head, going, yep, oh my gosh, that is exactly what's going, you know. And that is, like I said, you have to educate yourself. But truly, people need to understand this is reactionary abuse is I've been abused to such a level that I am locked in a cage. I have no way out. The only freedom I have is when the abuser decides to give me freedom. And when he does, there's always a cost I have to pay. No matter what, there's a cost for me to pay for me being in the cage. There's a cost for me to pay to get out. There's a cost for me to pay to, you know, go to work, to come home, to do. And I was one, I would go to work, come straight home. That was my life. There was no, like I said, the last 3, 4 years, actually, I think it was like the last 2 years, I wound up finding a group of women that. For like 6 months out of the year, we would get together like once every month. But the other 6 months of the year, it was like every maybe 2 or 3 months we would get together, you know. And they were the first people I told, I'll be honest. And it means a lot. You gotta find that. That you've got to find that canary in you, and whether it is you just trying to understand what you're going through or whatever, you know, this isn't right. That you know that from the very beginning of it happening, that that wasn't right, that was not cool, that was not the gentle soul that I fell for, you know. Because the gentle soul that you fell for is actually them mirroring you in the very beginning, so that way you will fall for them. It's a tactic they use, because you don't see yourself that way. But if you find somebody else who's like that, you're like, oh my God, you are my soulmate. You know, and but they quickly will turn, and you will not see that gentle soul again. And if you do, because they're putting you through that abuse cycle again, they're trying to woo you, if you will, you know, pull you back in. They're trying to, they see that maybe they went a little too far this time. So here, let me be good for a few days or a few weeks or however long they're, you know, because to me, all abusers also have a window of their loop that they can be good for. And on average, my abuser would go only a few days. 3 days was like he would start really just, but if he knew he kind of really fucked up or crossed a bigger line than he probably had before, he would go, I think 3 months was the longest I got him to be on good behavior. For him, you know, and you just, like I said, it when you hear some of that testimony and some of those statements, like, I don't have it, you know, verbatim here, but he had stated something to his ex-wife, Johnny Depp, Amber Heard thing, that you are not the person I fell in love with. And I fell in love with something that was all in my head. That will never happen again, or something like that. And to me, I was like, yeah, exactly. Because they manipulated you in the very beginning to believe that they were one way. And then when they turned and flipped that switch to where their real person came out, and now that abusive person and just nasty, ugly junk is there on a constant. It's a constant, you know. And even I heard her saying, I just wanted to give you a hug. And he goes, after you just did what you did to me, you know. And I remember feeling that way because, like I said, my abuser would use, he used sex a lot. That was his, he was a sexual abuser. He would rape, he would do whatever he could to get it. And he would manipulate any shape, way, or form he could. And you wind up going, you just did this. And yet, you know, like I said, even one time he, you know, he was very demeaning to me while we were having sex. And then he wondered why I was crying. You know, well, because did you not hear the words that came out of your mouth while you're doing this very intimate thing that I'm supposedly trying to be a good wife, if you will, you know? And like I said, the last year, I didn't have sex with him. I was finally got a doctor to say, if it hurts, don't. So I finally told him, doctor told me don't, because I had kidney stones and things like this. And my downstairs just, it hurt anytime he even touched me. And I realize now what that was. When you're raped so many times, especially by the same person, this is your abuser. This is no longer your safety person. You know, even if at some point you thought they were, they're not. And it's your body's way of rejecting that abuse. So for me, that's what it was. And like I said, I cannot impress enough the fact that reactionary abuse is a real thing. And when you hear a survivor speak their truth and you hear certain things that went on, even a conversation they can relay back to you, and you're like, yeah, I know exactly what that's like. That was me. That was, you know, my situation or whatever. Like I said, when you know, you know. And I don't think it's spoken about enough. It winds up being more often than not the abuser's way of trying to say, see, I'm being abused. I'm having these terrible things going on. And it's their way of being able to shine the light on the relationship, if you will. Because a lot of times they're the first persons that will, like I said, go to your family, go to your friends, go to whatever, you know. And it's one of their tactics. It's one of their tools. They will keep anything and everything that you have ever said, done, or otherwise in their back pocket to fling out later. You know, where for you, you might just go, hey, these are things that happened in our relationship. I don't want to, you know, drag all the dirty laundry out there. But, you know, it's like when you get a restraining order, you got to bring up some of that dirty laundry, you know. But I just really hope this sheds some kind of light on the real situation of reactionary abuse. And it's a real thing. You know, we all kind of get to that point, you know. But thank you again. This is the end. So I do want to thank you guys for joining me once again. And I hope this helps those that need the help. And if you need to reach out, feel free and reach out to me anytime. Loveisn'thurt@gmail.com. All right. See you guys next time.